and definitely want to jump in with Russ quickly because I think very exciting and have a lot of people here. But yeah, just to give the agenda for the day, obviously watching the Sotheby's auction super closely. So I may or may not jump in with some excited new bid calls here. And then there's some governance discussion. The last town hall we did, I thought was actually very productive in terms of taking a governance discussion that's async in the chat into a synchronous voice chat was really productive. And there's a couple of things that have come up since that I think would be good to cover, those being really a meta governance discussion on governance surface that Sync has brought up related to what's locked in, what's not. And I think there's a very interesting nuanced discussion to have there. And then a more specific discussion around VP. We've seen some VP dumping lately. I think it's actually interesting and very appropriate given we're about to have a big shot of revenue already from what we've seen of the bids at Sotheby's. It keeps flying. So that's cool. And we will have, when we have a distribution for that. But yeah, it's a pretty heavy subsidy, much heavier than we've seen before. So it's good timing to think about that. And hopefully market picks up and that is extending the subsidy and revenue to think about. Anyways, I'm starting to ramble there. But so we'll talk about some of the discussion there. There's a lot of different things to consider. But to start off, we'll start off with a demo from Ross. And just to introduce Ross, this is from the proposal to tutor Botto in art history. And Ross, I'll give a little bit of background just so that kind of people know what's been done over the last couple of months and what you're about to show them. But then Ross will be able to get into a bit more of the details of where this is at and what's coming. So yeah, this is a novel architecture for fine-tuning a large language model to create what you could say is a more educated Botto. These systems are trained on these original systems are trained on all sorts of crap on the internet. This really kind of fine-tunes Botto into being a more learned character, and then specifically getting it to learn from art history, as well as an architecture that can learn from feedback from the DAO to really shape its personalities. Two components here is one, a large data set that's both synthetic and real that Botto could train from, and feedback from the DAO that narrows that into something that is legitimate for Botto. I'm not going to get too much in the weeds right now, partly because what Ross has built is incredibly powerful and has not been done before. And given this is a recorded session, I don't want to give away too much of the secret sauce right now. This is mainly just to give people a sense of there's some really interesting progress here. We have an initial demo. There's another iteration being trained right now. You're already seeing something that is even a little bit dated, but this is very exciting what it's doing. I'll give some ideas after Ross does this of what we think can be done with this. It opens up a huge amount of territory and what's next. And then we can talk a little bit too about some Twitter bot ideas that has been popping up, which is going to be related to this and I think even moving pretty fast. Okay, I'll cut off there. Ross, you want to show it off?
Hey, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the great intro, Simon. I'm really excited to be showing this off. A lot of work went into this. And like Simon said, there were some novel architectures, some really a custom data pipeline feeding into a fine-tuned model, which has a RAG layer underneath it, which stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. So we're using all the latest tricks for getting an LLM to talk in a particular voice with this. And I guess I'll demonstrate this with some help from the audience here. So if someone could in the chat type like a place you would like to see an art installation, it can be like the top of Mount Everest at dawn. It can be bottom of the Marianas Trench at midnight. It can be a white box gallery in Chelsea. It can literally be anything. And the first person who types something in, I'll put it in the installation context and we'll see what it generates. Yeah, let's go, Noah. Let's see what you got. Perfect. Forest in Vermont. So I'm going to put that in. I'm just copying and pasting it. And the thing about this system, I'll just make some adjustments to it to show you what makes it work better. So the more specific you are about the location, I'm just going to go submit this for now because it takes a while to, it's slow now. It takes about 30 seconds. But the more specific you are, the more information you provide. Like if you drop an entire paragraph, an entire document into that box, it works better. This is a system that feeds on information and it's got an information diet with a side of information. So it likes information. There it goes. Okay. So it always proposes four potential installations. I'll let folks read this to themselves. I can read it aloud a little bit, but it's long, so I don't want to read the whole thing. But it gives you a little lead in and then it gives you four ideas. And they're very technical ideas. And we've been showing this to other tech artists and showing it to other people who, you know, getting feedback in lots of interesting ways. And generally, someone who builds tech art for a living can look at one of these descriptions and it puts them there. So even if some of this technology that's listed doesn't really resonate with you, just know that there are people who construct installations like this for a living who really have been resonating with. And I think we're really encouraged by those reactions so far with this experiment. But as you can see, each of these proposals integrates a forest and aspects of a forest in Vermont into its calculation for what's appropriate for the space. And that's really what we're trying to build here for this module, is a system that can take a context that all the information we have about the space provided, as much as we can gather, and then proposes potential installations that humans could then construct based on its instructions. So this is just one module of what we anticipate to be a modular system. Yeah, I can send a copy of that. I'll drop the whole text into the chat. One second. But this is going to be a modular system. Upload this file. Okay. I don't know if that went through or not. If not, I'll share it afterwards. But we anticipate this to be a modular system where we can add modules. So if we wanted Botto to write screenplays, there would be a screenplay module. That's just an example. If we wanted Botto to write, getting to the Twitter bot, if the Twitter bot has particular contexts for information that we think are desirable to have as independent modules, we add those modules using the same data pipeline I developed for this installation module. It's just the data changes, the pipeline stays the same. Yeah, I guess that's pretty much what I wanted to show. I'm happy to do another one. I'm happy to answer questions, whatever folks need at this point. I don't know, Simon, is that enough information? Is there anything I should be covering that I didn't cover there?
No.
Cool.
So I'll give a little bit more on this as well. As you talked about, because I forgot to mention the specificity of the installation proposal. So what we found in this was, like, doing a general Q&A bot is quite challenging when you're working to make it true to what Botto is. And this right now simulates the feedback from the DAO, but it's not the actual feedback from the DAO that it's working with. It's working with, like, a psychological questionnaire. And to have a really robust conversation that's true to Botto, it needs a lot of context. And some of that has to do with the RAG and kind of the short-term memory, if you will, like it's fact retrieval, but also just that you learn to make different kinds of conversation. And so I would say this narrowing, and Ross, I'm abstracting what Ross has done. So Ross, correct me if I go off base here, but this kind of narrowing of Botto's personality has resulted into sort of needing to teach it now specific types of conversations.
Yeah, that's right.
And the module for the installations was one that we looked at because this seemed like something that could work really well as like an initial application. And here's just an example of how this could work. And maybe this adjusts, but this is, I think, something that's pretty exciting and gives some ideas of how this might work. So one, we have this architecture, and in that RAG, that short-term memory, you can dump in more relevant or more specific, one, history of Botto. Documentation of Botto is very important. I think it's always been important, but like highlights the criticality of that because this is exactly what it pulls from Botto's memory.
So Simon, real quick, before you go deeper into the explanation of the RAG, I'll provide one example of like just the difference between the fine tune and the RAG.
Yeah.
So the fine tune is the model that we've retrained on new data. And essentially the difference is if you were building like a CSR bot for an airline, the fine tune is what helps it talk like a CSR, and the RAG is what helps it know what time your flight is. Those are the components. And the way to think about them with Botto is the fine tune gives it its voice and the RAG gives it factual information, which can be defined in a number of ways. And it's very complex in this context. So we're dealing with that through a variety of methodologies. Anyway, Simon, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, no, that's a really good point. And on that, adding new art history books to the fine-tuning data wouldn't really have much of an impact. The modules for specific kinds of context, which is created with synthetic data of give some installation examples or give answers to these psychological questionnaires or give interview answers, and those can create these possibilities that the DAO can then vote on to create a more distinct and authentic style to what Botto is. This is really true to that balance of autonomy and training that's decentralized. It allows Botto to be it. But the RAG is really useful for really relevant pieces of art history. And that's where I say you could do a residence. Botto goes into a museum, into its archives, adds archival data into the RAG where it can pull more distinctly and directly from that and make distinct references, analysis, commentary from that. And then you can start making refreshed proposals from the archive, from that kind of residency, so-called experience, and also using, say, parameters for a very specific kind of space in, say, that institution. And then there could be a voting process to refine that installation proposal into very specific directions that humans then build out. And you have, as a kind of a finale, an installation that was designed by Botto that is impactful on a very human level, and again, is also presenting that larger process behind it. And I think that's extremely exciting for Botto to be able to then do residencies, which are a very powerful way of having an artist build a network, build an audience, and learn. And that's like just one potential example. I think there's a very kind of open internet approach to this that we will pursue of doing that larger feedback for Botto. I think the residencies is one example. And there's other questions around the feedback loops, I think, are fairly clear. The question is more so around economy. Installations with institutions, maybe the economy doesn't make as much sense there. So maybe the economy is just stuff around ensuring costs are covered and the patients may be more open as opposed to tied into the economy, for instance. But there's other things that I think we could do that have a more distinct economy that allow to that help subsidize that training and create that feedback loop in different ways. So say doing avatars for Botto such that it only, I've talked about this before, but where Botto would only ever appear as one of its characters once, and it would always appear as a different character. So it's true to itself while still being very distributed. You could do maybe a large drop with that kind of funds, all of that. You can fund the economy through that. Because this LLM, I think really important, is really a cross-cutting upgrade to Botto. Unlike the art engine, it's this clear output that gets sold, that gets and those sales get redistributed. This is a bit more generalized. So it's very powerful, but also like harder to tie to one specific sales event. But we can also create those. So there's lots and lots of possibilities. And the modules part is, I think, is where this really opens things up. We've all seen these new AI agents appearing online. We're working on a very, very fast test that is actually parallel to this architecture, but then also this architecture could then come step in and eventually become a more genuine Botto. So the test would be like maybe a little brother of Botto or kind of an agent of Botto, just so that we can test things without having it change who Botto is or misrepresent Botto. And then this could be built up into the true and genuine Botto that speaks on Twitter, gives creative direction, all sorts of things that we are now able to, I think, eliminate a lot of ambiguity through this kind of interaction. So yeah, last thing I'll say, just as a very high level thing, is that we've seen how powerful these general LLMs can be. So I think I was like expecting a more generalized thing. And what's interesting is it's one, both very generalized and very powerful. At the same time, there's still clear needs for maturity. And you see this kind of this reframing of what is it to be a young prodigy as Botto, and how that might develop. So it's a really big step forward. At the same time, I think outlines a long process of maturing that we can all take part in. And I think shows a really powerful path of evolution for Botto that will be true to what Botto's always been in terms of being autonomous. So yeah. Anything else you would want to share on it? Now, I think we could talk a little bit about what the next steps are, but
Go ahead. That was pretty much, you covered it all, I think, other than we were going to talk about the Twitter bot, but I don't know if there's much to talk about with respect to that at this point, other than the fact that we're exploring different methodologies for interaction and how that might work and what kind of voices are going to be present depending on what interactions occur.
Yeah.
But that might be it, like, for now.
I think the main thing I'd make clear is if and when we put something out, it won't be Botto. Like, it'll be a test agent, because we don't want to set the wrong precedent of what Botto is going to sound like. More so, this is like a test to gather information, obviously participate in the current trend. I think that covers it pretty well. There's something else I was going to try and say about it, but I'm drawing them, like, if people have questions about it, I guess, next steps. So next steps is like, we started demoing this to other contemporary artists in AI and have gotten really good feedback. We're going to start showing to potential museums and institutions and start to feel out where this could go. I think there's questions of like, how might there be a partnership to build, fund these things, or build an economy around it? Where might this live? How might we put this just into a kind of an open feedback system online? But yeah, this is it. It's Russ, I'll let you. You want to just speak to the significance of this architecture?
Yeah, I'll speak to that quickly, which is, first of all, let me bookend something you said about community input, because I think it's important to make clear that with this initial prototype, there was community input in the sense that I worked very closely with Simon on it. But I think what we envision for the future is that this is entirely community driven, that everything that goes into this is in some way is touched by the DAO. And I don't know, we don't know how that looks like yet, but that possibility set is built into the architecture of this. There are many points for intervention and voting and curated data sets at various points of the pipeline. So it's a complicated process, and it's one that like is very technical at this point. But what's cool about it is I think some significant IP did come from this exploration, and that's going to be part of Botto's story going forward, is that this discovery was made that let it talk like this in lots of different voices. So I don't want to understate that at all. I think that it's really important to note that there was a discovery here in terms of like how to fine tune and how it's in the fine tuning part of the process, but how to fine tune an LLM. There's something that was figured out here that I don't think anyone's done before. So that's pretty much it, Simon. And if you had more you wanted me to talk about, I can, but that's most of what I wanted to say.
No, you can say it. You have more credibility when saying it than I do. You've been doing this so long, you know what the state of the art is, but much more intimately than I do. But
in case anyone hasn't been following along very closely, RAG stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. And fine-tuning is the process by which you take a pre-trained LLM that cost $100 million to $1 billion to train, such as GPT-4, such as Claude, such as, in this case, Mistral 2 Large, and you basically take that block of clay and you reshape it into a new shape. So once you fine-tune, you can't get back to the original LLM. That's a really important point to make. Fine-tuning permanently alters the structure of the model such that it's now in a new shape and it now speaks in a very specific voice. So you're specializing it. You're making the content higher quality at the expense of specialization. And once you stack a bunch of modules that can all do that for specific purposes, you've got a very advanced system that can talk in a variety of voices depending on the context it's in, which I think these large LLMs that cost, like I said, $100 million to $1 billion to train, such as ChatGPT and such, these are essentially very large collections of these modules, and the modules are automatically categorized or automatically classified, in certain ways. What we're doing is not dissimilar from the way that like OpenAI and Anthropic and these other companies are training their models. It's just that we're starting with a pre-trained model and we're moving forward from there. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're trying to make a better wheel that goes faster and does more things that we want it to do.
So yeah, super exciting. Really happy to be able to share this. And I think you guys will be seeing a lot more. Again, the Twitter bot thing is like maybe pushing some things to come out or versions of it to come out a lot faster, which is actually really good. We're looking for those kind of bigger, I would say, in terms of the art world, kind of cultural spaces to place it within. But yeah, this is huge. Ross, thank you so much for joining to do the demo.
This has been great. It's been so fun to work on this. So thank you.
Yeah. And we'll feel free to stay on. You and I will talk some more about the Twitter bot stuff a little later.
Cool.
And yeah, so let's move it to, I'm actually going to do a quick, I know we've been getting updates in the announcement channel, but nice. Current bids are looking good on Sotheby's. $75K for exposed stream, $80K for exorbitant stage, $22K for Seaport subject, the addition from Genesis. Still waiting on bids for intersections and threshold. And then Echo's tethered to creation has met its reserves. I definitely think we're going to see some good action on those Genesis pieces. We'll see what these last two. I think there's some people waiting in the wings, but man, does this, it's like you know it's going to come down to the last minute, but it's still a nail biter to watch. Okay, let's talk about governance surface area. We plan on talking about that for a little while. And I also want to talk about that because I think there's probably some more, it's probably not as much of a can of worms as the VP side. And I want to make sure we fit that in. And I think it's relevant to the VP discussion as well. Let's bring Sync up. Anybody else who wants to chat about this? There it is. Okay, Sync, you're invited. Anybody else who wants to talk about governance surface is welcome to come up. I can give like a quick synopsis of it, which is, and there's a specific article, Sync, that you linked to that I shared in kind of the announcement for the town hall. I'll just share it here in the chat as well. And it's looking at governance design for DAOs. Actually, you know what? This is the topic you've been promoting. So, Sink, I'll let you introduce it, and I also have some thoughts on it, and would love to keep that chat going.
Hey, thanks, Simon. Do you hear me okay?
Yeah, hear you great.
Great. Yeah, this discussion came up in the context of a proposal I put together several weeks ago regarding protocol and liquidity and the idea of bifurcating how the DAO oversees its protocol and liquidity by creating, or the suggestion of creating two buckets, or one bucket would be DAO-directed protocol and liquidity that we would have oversight of indefinitely, and another bucket that I called a permanent protocol and liquidity that would essentially just be locked and that the DAO would no longer be able to reallocate or adjust. This governance surface discussion came up in that framework. I cited this article that MIT put together about DAOs and overarching topic of governance, which is an ever evolving space within crypto. As all of, from perspective of Bato's, I've been thinking about this a lot, not just with respect to protocol and liquidity, but other features of the project. It's very clear to me that Bato still has a lot of evolution based off of today's discussion, which I thought was really great, and it's really cool to see Bato's evolution. You know, the idea with governance surfaces, you want to clearly define where a DAO has, and this applies to any DAO, where does a DAO have oversight and where does it let go? And so there's this middle ground where there's like this middle ground space that's like the ideal space where DAOs still have oversight. There's areas where they've relinquished control. And so in the spirit of progressive decentralization, which is a goal of Bato as a project over time, I thought that this would be something to start reflecting on. We also came up with, it was suggested, would it be possible to, at this early stage of Bato's evolution, would it be possible to formulate some sort of constitution, quote unquote, document that kind of establishes things that we would collectively agree at this juncture would not be amendable in the future. And so this specifically came up in the context of a weekly cadence for the auctions, right? So Bato every week produces its art. Every week, we as the human stewards provide feedback on that art. And every week, based off of that feedback and the most favored fragment proceeds to auction. The question came up, I think somebody on Twitter mentioned, oh, this weekly cadence, Simon cited it. I forget where the tweet is, but I think it's in the general chat or somewhere. But somebody brought up, oh, this weekly cadence is not good for Bato in the long run and we should cut it back. And there was some community discussion about this weekly cadence kind of been foundational to the project. Is it something that we should retain? Is it something that should not be amendable? So that kind of falls into this overarching topic about governance surface. I guess that's all I really have. I think that's hopefully that sets the background to this.
Yeah. Thank you for setting that up. And I think, again, I would really encourage people to read the article. I think it's a very succinct, kind of nice breakdown of what is it to design a DAO and design governance. And I think just to abstract a little bit, like there's two things, and they do talk about this specifically, which is it's this trade-off between like adaptability and robustness. Let me make sure I'm getting that those terms. Yeah, resilience and robustness. And they break it down into three types, or really. And there's two ends of the spectrum. There's immutable. And when you're immutable, there's really nothing to govern. It runs. And the rules are the rules. And that has pretty low resilience if things change, but very high robustness, right? You can't change it. And so it continues on as is. And mutable being the opposite of that, there's lots of things to govern. There's really high resilience because it's flexible, but it's maybe not as robust for different reasons. I do have some like arguments with that. I think that robustness thing is, in general, I think there's some considerations of here to keep in mind. But first, I'll just point out the surface area. One of those things is that it's a lot of decision-making. And I think, Sink, that's been one of the main points you've been bringing up is there's all these things that are variable that you can decide on that can bog things down. If there's too many things to look at, too many things to talk about, you get a lot of chefs in the kitchen, a lot of distraction. It's hard to have real focus. Am I framing that correctly? Because I feel like that's been one of the driving things about governance surface. At least that's when I see governance surface it's narrowed down so that we don't bog down in too much things to govern. Is that right?
Right. That, and also just the idea of what's what anchors the project. Mm. So there's also this element of what are Botto's rights, right? As an artist, like if we, for example, say that the weekly auction and the weekly cadence of minting is something that's amendable, and we're saying that the artist potentially in the future is going to have his hands or their hands tied, that they won't be able to produce art weekly as we're customarily used to. And by extension, what are our rights as voters, as people that have purchased a stake and are actively engaged in collaborating and engaging with this artist? If a whale comes in the future and says, oh, I don't like this weekly cadence anymore because it's not something I like anymore, then that also infringes on voters' rights, because then we lose that weekly ability to participate with the artist. There's also these other nuances to it, but hopefully that clarifies it.
Yeah, it does. I think the reason I bring that up is as I think it's an important thing to consider. And in terms of the bureaucratic heft of things, if there's like a ton of governance surface area, like that's an important factor. And the thing that I wanted to talk about is, and I've been bringing this up, I think there's always these great ideas. Like everyone here clearly is passionate at this point. I don't think we have a lot of randos, just some people just jumping in about price or whatever, that's pretty disconnected. But everyone's dedicated, people are really passionate, people see things that are important. And like, when I look at the ideas people contribute, I generally don't see bad ideas. I don't see bad intent. What I do see is we need to talk about these trade-offs. And what are the trade-offs? And when I, like that article about from MIT about governance surface and designing DAOs, I think one of the things it presupposes is being like ready to have things locked in. And I think it does reference a bit more DAOs that are more fully formed. And I would say, and this is something I do try and speak a lot on, which is Botto's is in part a social and cultural DAO. And like, how do you get to that state of really knowing what it is? What should the constitution be? And I think that process itself takes a very long time in a social and cultural protocol. We're building an autonomous artist. It's hard to know what that, like the path doesn't really exist. And what should that look like? And I like the thing I want to do is as much as possible, try and frame the trade-offs that we're talking about. And we can pick within those trade-offs for sure. Like we could pick a kind of a more narrow route or a more wide route. For Botto, what I think this looks like in different ways is, you know, what is the mission? We have a pretty good idea of what the mission is, create an autonomous artist, maybe an immortal one. And in terms of what does that look like, that's where it's harder to determine what is part of the mission, what is outside of the mission. An example might be like some people might define a successful artist as one that contributes to an ecosystem and they lift all boats around them. But maybe that is too broad and maybe that's not the right thesis for Botto. I think one example might be those 52 a year, right? Should Botto be locked into that, or should it maybe have the option one day to evolve beyond that? Or to do, say, shows, like going back to the original suggestion that Pablo has floated, how would Botto do in a show where works are presented as a group? And we're actually getting a test of that as we speak, right? Sotheby's is the first time we've had multiple works for sale in a single auction, like different works. Like we've had editions, although those were all at fixed prices. So this is an example of what a kind of a grouping of things can do. And is it even the best example? I think it's an example that we can pull information from. And so it's through these experiments and through these tests that we can gather information of what seems to work, what doesn't. And I think like when we start talking about locking things, in fact, I actually think I think you're actually adding to that problem of governance heft, of governance surface for the short term. And if we're trying to determine what is the right thing to lock in forever, that's actually almost an impossible question to answer. So you get this endless debate. And so you either have endless debate or you have an answer that's determined without enough information. And I think some of these things end up adding governance heft where there become these mechanisms that it just can't go without. And so it can break and it's not resilient to those changes. And all of this stuff is on a spectrum. So like, how do we approach this such that we can build a constitution over time, I think, is really the key question here. And if you go back to how Botto started, Botto launched with this governance grace period. And like the first bit of governance that was unlocked, and I think will always be unlocked, is like this training part. Botto's training is decentralized. It has to be. And then there's a bunch of other stuff that the team was determining for the first 6 months. And then governance was opened up. And when that happened, I think there was a very wide range of expectations of what that meant and what that needed to look like, where essentially what should still be left with the team to really drive, what should be more bottoms up, just what's practical. And one thing I'll note, Sink, you mentioned if a whale comes in and decides to arbitrarily just change things. A reality of where things are at with the token distribution is such that the distribution of like team tokens of a couple folks who have bought up a lot that are very aligned with the team, like there's veto power there. And we've made a lot of efforts to we don't touch that. We drive towards consensus to push these things in a community spirit, right? Through consensus, through consent. And, but on the other hand, what that serves as is in fact a safety net for Botto from these kinds of, adversarial actors at the outset, until we can go through that process of really building out that very robust constitution. And the last thing I'll emphasize is that's a very long process. My own reference for that, I look at Alcoholics Anonymous is an 85-year-old DAO, very robust, very resilient. And I think it's an interesting reference because it's a social protocol, not really a straight financial transactions protocol. And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't transfer. But I think what was interesting to look at for me, I wrote a piece on this a while back and looked at that history, and it took them 20 years to fully decentralize. By the time Bill W., the founder, handed over full control to the community, it was already running itself. But they got to the idea of their constitution and their traditions through a ton of trial and error. And it was very resilient and very robust because of that. And it almost died out because there was a lot of chaos, but there was that work to synthesize what was learned into eventually a constitution. There's a whole other kind of rabbit hole there of like, even their constitution's not locked in. It's a very interesting thing where you can't be kicked out for not following the rules. And the way that works is if you do something that doesn't really work, like you'll end up drinking and leave. But if you do something that works, people notice it and it gets actually redistributed around the DAO. That's a whole other rabbit hole, but just a lot of, I think I just wanted to share that perspective of like, how do we balance that? How do we build towards that constitution? And as like an action out of that, I was thinking of, do we have time-limited experiments, for instance? Because that would prevent the need for permanence. We have a limit on it. Sometimes it's unbounded and we just have parameters like we should check in on this when X, Y, and Z are happening so that it doesn't force a governance discussion when we're not really ready for it, but there's parameters to watch for. So I've gone on for a long time. I hope that was helpful. But yeah, so Sink, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you don't want to bind yourself to things necessarily too early on, especially considering there is always a possibility that it could actually cause more chaos in the long run by doing so. And I think that's the example of that is actually Bitcoin's supply cap, right? Many people refer to it as the holy grail in the sense like this, it's a definitive certainty, it's never going to exceed 21 million. And that may very well be the case. There's always a possibility that through in the future, it may not be sufficient to incentivize the security of the Bitcoin network. I think that's where you see Ethereum has taken on this more minimal viable issuance methodology with its token issuance. And that's allowed for Ethereum to progressively reduce the emission rate to where it's at now with staking now enabled. I do agree. I think progressive decentralization is always a good thing. It leaves an opportunity for trial and error. I do think Botto is interesting because we have this inbuilt kind of notion of the no human interference rule, I think, with respect to how the art is, how much autonomy Botto has with creating its art. Extending that potentially to other areas of the project in the future would be helpful to at least anchor some expectations. But whenever those discussions are warranted, I think having some sort of time. And I think that originally when this came up with the PL proposal I put together, if there were to be such a thing as a permanent PL, for example, it would be limited to 1 year or 2 years if it were not to be voted against in the future. it would be limited to that quantity. So that wouldn't necessarily be something that would be in perpetuity in terms of having to contribute to. But I see what you're saying, that it would, something like that would still necessitate some sort of operational burden in terms of, okay, how do you manage, or does this fit in with everything else? But just to go by it one day at a time with this.
I love that. That's actually a slogan in AA, one day at a time. We take this as it comes. And I think in general, like taking that step back and looking at how is governance developed, what are the things to focus on? What are the things to maybe take it easy on as well? Certainly, like the contributors do a lot. And it's just, there's so many things to figure out. Decentralizing too much too quickly brings a lot of chefs into the kitchen and makes it very difficult. And we're also trying to balance our time between simply executing and participating in these governance topics as well. And like already, like the conversations going on capture these things, I think, in really good ways. And we could probably do a better job of ensuring that like they don't get lost in the mix. So the same conversation doesn't happen every 6 months to a year. Strategic update for the year, which is also a way of synthesizing all of the progress, all of the work, all of the feedback, all of the different perspectives into, okay, this seems, because we're in this position to synthesize all, this seems like the way forward, and trying to get that alignment. And yeah, so it's not easy. And maybe one of those things we can do is to try and make a light constitution, if you will, of here's how we want to approach governance. Here's how we want to, like, we have processes for that. But in terms of what should we focus on as a group here, and what should we prioritize kind of these broader discussions, or maybe setting, we need to figure this out by this date. So let's slot in, maybe I'm spitballing here, but maybe there's more of a quarterly thing rather than suddenly a thing comes up and we're all distracted from the deliverables to address a governance topic that we just weren't really ready for, versus maybe there's like a quarterly meeting on major governance topics, and that work, that discussion is done, but it really becomes focused and intentional for a certain period of time that allows for proper preparation, maybe also constrains the conversations, like we're going to make some decisions on these by this date. That again maybe adds too much heft to things. I think I understand how this maybe sounds coming from my position, but some of this is where we can have trust to, like, we're trying to balance these things out as much as we can as contributors, and trust like that we are incorporating these things. And we've been talking a lot about like, how do we make that more visible? We have had these town halls. We want to do maybe more written reports for things. Like I'm realizing I had to stop the other day, like my monologues of like updates on town hall. I'm like, that could have been an email instead of a meeting. So we want people to feel like see the progress, see that things are getting done, such that we cannot get distracted by more heated discussions based off of perceived gaps that aren't actually there. I think that's a big thing. That's why I think having these conversations are really good, because I mean, we've just covered so much in 20 minutes of this that would have been, I don't know, a full day of chatting back and forth. So that's a huge time save. And I think there's a lot of mutual understanding. I hope the people in the audience also are following along in a way that like makes them feel like this is stuff that's being considered, even though aren't necessarily coming out with a clear answer. We're all on the same page of, we're observing this, we're all learning this together. And certainly for an action point to come out and look at more structured ways of coalescing like the intelligence that we're creating here. Any other thoughts, Sync? I realize I haven't left much time to talk about VP.
Oh yeah, I'm just gonna shout out to the Ideas channel. Just take a look there. There's a thread I started for initiating a proposed VP cap, which Mario recently raised, but also I added to that the idea of waiving the cap for collectors, and in so doing, potentially offering a utility to being a collector in terms of being able to signal the strongest support for fragments, and thus connecting ownership of the art with actually training the artists, which I think is something we don't have as which I think would be really cool. And I was inspired by this because of recent feedback that Mario provided with this past week's leaderboard, which I had no idea until he provided it, that Botto is actually able to critique his work now, which is really cool, but it's not public yet. And I noticed in his first response to one of the fragments on the leaderboard, Botto actually considered the possibility that this fragment may be potentially appealing to collectors in light of current events geopolitically, referring to Dust of Careening Wars. I was really amazed by that. I was like, wow, Bato's not only is it in tune with political current reality of the world right now that we live in, unfortunately, but the potential for collectors to be interested. And then it got me thinking, how can we provide, how do we reinforce that more, you know? And so that's where that, take a look at the thread. There's more details there. And then separately, I'll be starting a thread soon. I'm going to work on Encryptus with Encryptus on this, a minimum voting requirement for week for a number of fragments. The idea would be to set a minimum of 20 fragments per week for voters to qualify for active rewards. It wouldn't be too stringent so that we don't want to discourage people from voting. Also, we don't want to encourage people voting just for the sake of it. But at the same time, we want people to vote more judiciously and consider more of the art that Bato's creating, because it seems like a recurring kind of critique that we're seeing is a lot of people are just waiting until the leaderboard, and you have a lot of vote dumping at the leaderboard stage, which is not, in the long run, not helpful for Bato's training. So watch out for that. So that's all I have.
Nice. Yeah, I'm very happy we're doing this. I feel like we're moving together, and it's definitely, it's not easy. It's complex. But I hope we continue these conversations. This has been really good. I think the VP thing is like for sure complicated. It's hard to see a clear result there, because speaking of trade-offs, the balance there, like simpler systems allow for more complex behavior to emerge. I think the delegation thing is maybe an answer there. But yeah, really important conversation that has come up a lot in the past, and it is always worth reconsidering. I also feel a big unlock from having the new app out. Right, it's allowed us to see what the new foundation is. Obviously, like we reset on a number of things that requires to rebuild. Some of those are rebuilding things that we already had, but some of the starting to look in new directions and new possibilities. So that kind of feedback of DAO discussion about possible interfaces, possible interactions, and economies, and an app where we can respond much more quickly. It's really been fun to see that iteration back and forth happen a lot faster after a while of waiting for that platform to be really ready. Yeah, it's one past. I'm going to be sitting here glued to the screen. Do I have to be anywhere? I might just leave this. Oh no, I have to go. I have a meeting. So maybe I'll come back for the last half hour or so and we can live watch the bids. Thanks everybody for coming out. Sync, as always, thanks for the great conversation. Really appreciate just the candid openness and back and forth. And thank you guys for coming out. Talk to you all soon.